Hello and welcome to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And tonight we look at what it takes to make it to the top of your profession. I heard one man once say, he said, "We are all self-made, but only the successful among us will admit it." Do you believe you're the master of your own destiny, or do you think you're a slave to an economic system, shackled to the economic caste you were born into? Undeniably, those greats among us who break down barriers and catapult themselves into the top echelons of society are the ones who believe they have a choice. Tonight, not only will we look at what it takes to make it to the top of your profession or your career, we are also going to have a bit of competition. Tonight, our competition will go to whoever can identify the author of this poem. Mind is the master power that molds and makes, and man is mind, and evermore he takes the tool of thought, and shaping what he wills, brings forth 1,000 joys, 1,000 ills. He thinks in secret, and it comes to pass. Environment is but his looking glass. So if you think you know who wrote that, SMS us at 4001, or use our mobile app to interact with us directly in the studio. You can also give us a call at 04-423-1010. And whoever wins, that gets a free hour of executive coaching. So good luck with that one. But I think the real message there is, you know, do people really attract what they want, or are they attracting what they are? When you look at it, you really have to ask yourself, how powerful is the power of thought? Is it more powerful than physical reality? Are you bound by your environment, your history? Is history the pen that etches your future? Or is your future a blank slate, a fresh chapter with which you can write with limitless opportunities? For the latter is what the top performer believes, and the former is what those who wallow in mediocrity tend to subscribe to. But we will explore this in more detail as we go through this episode of Eye on Careers. Tonight, we have two guests, not one, but two, who are going to explore what it takes to get to the top of their game. Our first guest is Craig Moore. He's the Chief Executive Officer and founder of Beehive, a peer-to-peer lender. Of course, that's not his only business. It wasn't the first business he started. He seems to be a bit of a veteran in the entrepreneurial arena. But let's hear a little bit more about his background. Actually, we don't have the right one loaded up. Well, let me tell you a little bit more about his background. Craig founded, he's the founder and CEO of Beehive, which was recently launched as the UAE's first online marketplace for peer-to-peer lending. Craig is responsible for overseeing the overall strategic direction of Beehive and managing the day-to-day operations. Beehive has grown quickly, employing 14 staff at their offices in Jumeirah Lake Towers, and has already facilitated around 2 million dirhams in business funding, with new businesses applying every week as awareness continues to build and grow about their operation. Prior to setting up Beehive, Craig was the co-founder and chief operating officer of Butterfly Software, set up in 2009, only to be sold in 2012 to IBM. This guy is one bright spark, but let's not bore you too much with his bio. Let's bring Craig on to the show here. Craig, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here, and you know, we're all envious. You're one of these dot-commer IT cyberspace entrepreneurs who's minting money overnight faster than ever in history we've seen.
Well, I'm not necessarily sure that I'm minting money.
You came in your helicopter, didn't you?
Yeah, I parked that outside. I think it's an interesting time at the moment. I mean, especially if you look globally at the continued acceleration of technology and what technology is bringing to different geographies and different marketplaces.
We're in a time right now where if we're on radio and we say, look, this guy created a multi-million-dollar business in less than 3 years, and nobody is going to say, yeah, right. And you know, it's completely, everyone feels that that's a completely believable achievement. If I would have had the same dialogue 10 years ago or 15 years ago, in the 90s even, so in the, you know, say 15 years ago, people would have not believed that it's possible. But so now we're actually in a moment in history where wealth creation is the easiest it's ever been.
Yeah, I think good ideas are good ideas. I mean, if you look at some of the absolute runaway successes in technology, one of those, I guess, was Twitter and Instagram. I think Instagram was sold for about $1 billion with 13 employees.
I wish I invented Instagram.
Don't we all? But I think technology is a great leveler, and it's one of the areas that all economies and governments should be looking to encourage and drive, because when you have youth and you have ambition, then technology allows them to bring their ideas to the fore and really create something that can be quite special.
What are you saying, that like old people can't like use technology? Like, what is that supposed to mean? Why does it have to be youth? Why can't it just be technology?
It can be.
You're
technology.
Ageist. You're an ageist.
I'm not an ageist.
Oh my God! It looks like we have a traffic jam on the tunnel to the Palm here. So anyone heading out to the Palm for a soiree, perhaps, may want to try to reroute. Unfortunately, I don't think there's any other roads. So I don't know how you're going to get around that one. We have a few people taking a stab at who is the author of the poem. No takers yet, no winners yet. It's still up for grabs. But, you know, I think when you look at it, you know, I would contest it's not up for grabs just for youth. I think it's for anyone who gets in the right mindset, you know, and there's so many people moping around saying, oh, you know, the oil price is dropping, or this is happening, or that's happening, and, you know, it's not the right time. And it's like, hello, this is the most exciting time to be alive, to do business. And you have more growth levers at your disposal. You have more tools in your war chest than ever before. Do you not agree? It's easier to become rich now than at any other point in history.
No, I would agree. Absolutely. And I think, first of all, back to your ageist point, that's clearly not the case. But I completely agree that, you know, now is the time for good ideas to find their way to the top very quickly. And I also think it's, you know, entrepreneurship, from the way that I see it, is predominantly, it's about tenacity. It's about the ability to keep moving forward. But you've still got to have a good idea, right? Because the world is getting a smaller place. So you're competing with more and more people who have got the same access to technology. And you've got to make sure that you've got something that differentiates from other offerings. But then you do have the gumption and the tenacity to drive that through.
I mean, so I definitely agree with you on the tenacity piece, but when you know, I think innovation's overhyped. I mean, I just think they put, you know, it's just this buzzword that's going around, and be innovative. We're going to be lead by innovation. And you'd look at like Kobone.com, for example, you know, ask Peter and Kenny, you know, how they came up with the idea. They're like, we copied Groupon. You look at MuckTube, we copied Google. You know, is it really the idea, the execution? You know, when you're talking about tenacity, you're really now talking about being tactically strong, being able to execute. And that's where people drop the ball. They want to sleep more than they want to be successful.
No, I agree. And I think, you know, if we take Beehive as an example, Beehive is a online marketplace for peer-to-peer lending, but it's certainly not the first. I mean, you're probably aware of recently Lending Club in the US has just IPO'd. And it is about taking good ideas, taking them to new geographies, taking them to new marketplaces. But you're right, it's about the execution. And it's the execution that tends to differentiate the winners from the losers.
So let's just quickly touch on your career. And I know, you know, you were talking about, you know, older people not doing so well. But one of your first jobs was at McDonald's, and Ray Kroc only started when he was 57.
Superb.
There's a little bit of gray hair success streak, a silver streak to the podium there with Ray Kroc. I think he was still like, you know, at 7 years old, he was just going strong, having a Big Mac attack.
Shane, you talk like I'm 22. I'm 40.
Well, you look like, I don't know.
42. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's...
You look like you're about 18.
Right, thank you. Yeah. No, I mean, my career, well, whilst I was at university, I worked at McDonald's. I also worked in a bedpan packing factory. So
a what? A bedpan packing factory?
That's right. Not at the same time, but...
bedpan packer. That almost sounds like it'd be colloquial for something else.
I didn't realize this was a comedy show. I thought this was a career show.
It's business. It's serious.
Ah, okay. Yeah. And then after university, I worked in accounting and finance, first of all, for HSBC, and then started to move into sales and consultancy, predominantly in the technology space, so companies like EMC, Dell, Hitachi Data Systems. Managed to fit in a little bit of world travel in between that. And then, as you say, in 2009...
Like, what does that mean? You took one of those year backpacking years and
absolutely, yeah.
Find yourself? Did you find anything, or you were more confused at the end of the year than before you left?
Probably more confused.
That's exactly what happens. You know, people, you're not going to find, find your direction in life on the beaches of Bali. You know, if anything, you're going to come back more scrambled than you left. I guarantee that, you know. You find your direction by putting your nose to the grindstone.
No, I would agree. But I think... sometimes actually taking a little bit of time out or distance gives a bit of perspective.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I never got the chance. I'm just bitter. I never got to take my ear. No. So, when you look at your career development, you were really getting steeped in industry best practices, best process. You know, you're really exposed to the infrastructure of Fortune 100, FTSE 100 companies.
Yeah, I think yes, but probably more important, what you tend to do is you tend to meet other people, right? And you build your network. And most successful businesses, in fact, I would argue all successful businesses, rely on teams, right? So even when you have somebody who is seen as the entrepreneur, they cannot achieve what they achieve without a solid team behind them. So I think as you go through working at different organizations, you meet different people, you find people with complementary skill sets, and then if the opportunity arises, you can come together as a team and actually try to execute. And that's what happened with Butterfly.
Mm. Yeah. But how do you get people to join your team when when you first started Butterfly, where I'm guessing you didn't have a huge office, maybe you're working from your kitchen or something.
Yeah.
Were you from your kitchen, really?
Dining room, yes.
Dining room. That's so you had a office. It's a home office. So what do you get? What do you bring people over to your living room? And you're like, look, this could all be yours one day. I mean, that chair, that beanbag chair is free.
Do you want to join? You do have to paint a vision.
Yeah.
What do they say? A vision without a plan is just a dream. So you've got to have a vision, but then you've also got to have a plan of how you're going to execute and actually get and make that vision a reality.
So it's all selling. You got to sell people on
absolutely.
Tomorrow. And that's part of the job of the entrepreneur.
Yes,
is picking up that dream and instilling. I say, one of the things they say, the two E's. I think they say you have to have the energy and you have to be energizing, right?
Absolutely.
Because some people have energy, but they de-energize everyone. You're not one of those. Not
seemingly, you're the opposite. I mean, you're the two goodies. Anyway, this is
Craig. He's the founder of and CEO of Beehive, and he'll be right back in a minute talking about how he's created not one but two stellar.com startups. More from Craig Moore in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are listening to a serial.com entrepreneur, a man by the name of Craig Moore. He is co-founder of Butterfly Software, a company that he started in 2009, which sold for millions to IBM. Then he started a second company, which is Beehive, which is a peer-to-peer lender, which is also taking off. And here's Craig now. Craig, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thanks.
I know you refused to tell us how much you sold your first company for, but we'll see if we can weasel that out of you before the end of the show. But I was wondering, so many people dream of starting their own company, but never really jump off like that guy when you're a teenager and you're going cliff jumping for the first time. And you know, there's always one or two guys who stand at the top of the cliff too long and then they never make the jump. So how do we, you know, how did you get the inspiration to really take that leap and go crashing into the wild world of entrepreneurialism?
I think if, you know, I can only talk about my experience, but you get to a point where you think, if I don't do this now, there is a good chance that I'll never do it. So when I started Butterfly with my co-founders, it just felt the right time to try to break the corporate kind of...
Did you get in a fight with your boss, though? Or?
Yeah, I mean, that's de rigueur. I mean, yeah. you've got to fall out with the company you're working with. And obviously, then I erase it in history and talk about how I just, you know, went forward. No, I didn't, actually. I think it was just an opportunity came. You know, we had an idea. We thought we could execute on that idea. And we thought it's either now or never.
And did you have kids at the time?
No.
Were you married at the time?
No.
Oh, okay, so that does that play into? I guess that
it does. It does. I think when you don't have financial commitments, then of course you can look at this and think, okay, well, I have got money to last me X amount of months. I'm going to take the gamble, and that was the situation.
I was talking to Issan Jawad, who's the founder of Zalya.com and LeMoon.com, and he's a serial entrepreneur as well now. And I think in 2001, 2002, you know, there was a dot-com crash, there was war, there was all kinds of nasty things happening, and he was like, I was so broke, you know, I couldn't even get a date. I was in my parents' house, and you know, it's tough time. So you're right. I mean, I think you have to take the jump at a certain point. And was it nerve-wracking though?
Yeah, it was. It was, actually. I think what tends to happen is you go through the various different stages of euphoria because you've actually done it, and then reality bites, and then...
It's like, wait, just stay in the month. They don't get a paycheck.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, suddenly friends are calling you up, and you haven't got the money to necessarily go out. But by the same token, you know, whenever you have the success, and when I mean success, I mean that might be... You sell the next deal, you kind of take on this new staff, you move into new offices. Every little point is a success point that just anchors back so that you realize, actually, I'm doing the right thing here, or I'm certainly doing the right thing for me.
Was there any point, you know, in the first business where you were like, you just wanted to go hang yourself or throw yourself out the window or they light yourself on fire, or maybe you're more calm type of suicide where you just use the... exhaust from the car or something like that?
No, 20 or 30 times.
Yeah.
it got bad at times.
Yeah. What was the worst one?
I just think that sometimes the worst one is probably when you're actually selling a business, because the process is very, very intrusive and very tense at a time. So, you know, it was great that it happened, but especially when you're dealing with a company like IBM that's very thorough whenever it does due diligence, that is a stamina test when you're selling a company to people like that.
I guess they're niggling at every little thing.
No, they're just very, very thorough, and you know, they have to be. I mean, it's an obligation to shareholders, but for entrepreneurs who are used to dealing maybe faster and being able to accelerate, I guess, the process, then for people such as IBM or large corporates who have got the process and the procedures, then they have to take the necessary time. And sometimes the two worlds collide. And that makes it, that can make it quite stressful.
Well, so if you're listening to this, you feel like killing yourself, or you're depressed, or things are just not going your way, it's normal. Everybody feels like that.
Absolutely.
The darkness will end. You just got to keep pushing through. You know, you just don't quit. You know, pain is only temporary. It may last a minute, an hour, a month, a year, but eventually it will subside, you know, and the people who make it, like yourself, Craig, are the ones who keep trudging forward and overcome those negative emotions. So then finally you do sell it to IBM. Mm. How long of a break did you take before diving back into the next business?
I stayed with IBM until the summer of 2013 and then literally started working on Beehive.
The next one. Also, part of the deal was that you would stay on with the company after it was acquired.
Yeah, I mean, whenever, I mean, you tend to see this with a lot of entrepreneurs. there was an opportunity to stay with IBM for a number of years, and I took the decision that I wanted to go off and pursue something else. I think, you know, we talked about it off air, is that if you tend to be entrepreneurially minded, then corporate life, once you've been an entrepreneur, you find corporate life very, very difficult.
Right. But, you know, there's still, you know, for those people who, you know, a lot of people have great careers working in the corporate life. It's still a great environment.
Of course.
And it's kind of, you know, I think as you mature, finding out what, you know, what you're not before you know what you are. Sometimes you have to go in that corporate environment, feel it's not for you. I've had other people who've worked in the big corporates and took a plunge to do the entrepreneurial thing, and they missed having the unlimited resources of that huge global aircraft carrier with teams all over the world to get this function and that function as well moving. So now when you jump into doing Beehive, was it a little less nerve-wracking? Because, you know, as you said, now you're in entrepreneurial mode and it's not, you know what to expect. Or is it still causing a few gray hairs? You don't really seem to have any right just yet. So
it must be the Grecian 2000.
Yeah.
It presents different challenges. I think it's always nerve-wracking, but do you know what? I think it's those things that kind of move you forward. You know, they keep you on your toes. They make sure that you keep alert. And Beehive, because of course Beehive, you know, Butterfly was set up in the UK. Beehive is based here in the UAE, and that's kind of, you know, a double adjustment. So one, it's a business in that I hadn't worked before. Yeah. So it was important that I built a team around me that had extensive experience in the region. Mm. So everybody from my chairman, Rick Pudner, all the way to my management team, who had, you know, anywhere between 5 and 7 years experience in this marketplace, around credit and around finance. So it's important, again, that you surround yourself with the right team, the right skill sets. But it was a different challenge, because this time we set up to build big early doors.
Well, what about financing now? Are you running this on your own dime, or did you get financing yourself, or how did you approach it?
So we're a typical tech startup in the sense that you know, it's all about building scale. Whenever you look at anything like an online marketplace, whether that's an Uber, whether it's an Airbnb, or whether it's a Beehive, it's all about building scale, and it's a land grab. So it was important that we invested up front, and in order to do that, then we raised money amongst a number of individuals, and we will continue to raise various different funds as we go forward over the next year or two.
Okay, and do you think that's the way to go? Or some, you know, some people, I think they don't start the business because they're so focused that I need this huge amount of money. And the truth is, a lot of businesses, you start from your living room, like you did, right? You know, what's your take on that?
No, I think, you know, a lot of successful businesses are bootstrapped, first of all. And, you know, Butterfly was definitely bootstrapped. Beehive, we took a slightly different approach, partly because you know, it was a land grab. We need to build scale quickly. But there's an awful lot of capital out there. You know, you talked earlier in the show about ideas and, you know, kind of an opportunity for people to grow businesses and maybe generate wealth better than any time in human history. And that's certainly around now, purely because there's so much capital chasing good ideas. You know, if you've got a good idea, you will find the capital. You will find the capital.
Right. And then it's a question, what kind of capital do you want? Do you want a silent investor who's putting his money there? Do you want a strategic investor? Or do you want someone who's going to be involved in your business? How do you go about deciding on that factor?
Well, I think that depends on what kind of business you've got. So, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it was important that we put together a kind of comprehensive management team, and obviously bringing on Rick as the chairman was part of the strategy.
For those who don't know, Rick Pudner is the former chief executive officer of Emirates NBD and a former divisional CEO within HSBC Global.
Yeah, that's correct. So, you know, that was part of helping Beehive raise the awareness. And it was something that I think Rick really took to as a new challenge coming out of Emirates NBD.
A completely different environment as well, I think, from Emirates NBD. We are having a competition this evening for anybody who thinks that they can guess who the author of this poem is. You can SMS the answer to 4001 or use our mobile app, which you can get from DubaiI1038.com, and interact with us directly. Here is the poem. Mind is the master power that molds and makes, and man is mind, and evermore he takes. The tool of thought and shaping what he wills brings forth a thousand joys, a thousand ills. He thinks in secret, and it comes to pass. Environment is but his looking glass. And besides the poem, I think there's a message there, which is a bit of, we're all our own invention, in a sense. I don't know if you agree with this, but a certain part, it's the subtext of what you're talking about, whether, I'm not comfortable in the corporate environment, I'm more comfortable here. This is, you're talking about your identity as who you are. And you're saying at a certain point, you said, I'm an entrepreneur.
Yes. Yeah. I think everybody, whether it takes you 2 years or 20 years or 40 years to find exactly what you want to do and who you want to be, it's part of the journey. And that's life, I guess.
And that's one of the foundation stones in your success story is finding that sense of identity, which allows you to stomach those butterfly moments, if you will.
You're creating a buzz. You really are.
This is iCareers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. We're listening to the story of Craig Moore, the founder and CEO of Beehive, a peer-to-peer lender. He's sharing his insights on how to make money in cyberspace, how to start your own business, how to go for gold. We're going to be back in just a minute.
Dubai I 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to I on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are listening to the story of Craig Moore, the founder and chief executive officer of Beehive. He first started his career moving through a series of multinationals. The first one, McDonald's, and but then he moved into Dell, IBM. I think IBM. I can't remember them. There was a lot. There was HSBC. Dell and EMC, there we go, before taking the plunge and becoming an entrepreneur and starting Butterfly, a software company, which he then sold to IBM, and his latest one, Beehive. Craig, welcome back to Ion Careers.
Thank you.
It's quite exciting. And for those of you also just joining us, we're having a competition for anyone who can identify the author of this poem. Mind is the master power that molds and makes, and man is mind, and every more he takes. The tool of thought and shaping what he wills brings forth a thousand joys, a thousand ills. He thinks in secret, and it comes to pass. Environment is but his looking glass. To what point do you think, as a business person, you need to use your imagination, creating that vision for yourself? We've had people on the show who create vision boards, who create goals for themselves. Many people, for example, visualize themselves in that position or even signing that deal or that transaction that they need to do. Is that part of the toolkit, or is that artsy fartsy esoteric fairy dust that we shouldn't pay any attention to?
No, I think you've always got to, start out with the end in mind. So, and if you think about it, it's just the same if you're pitching a business idea to a set of VCs or investors. You've got to show them where you believe you can take this idea, because it's just an idea at the start, and how you're going to build a business around that idea, and how you're going to execute on that, and what that idea is going to look like as a business in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 7 years, whatever the time horizon may be. So it's very important you start with that end in mind, and then you start to build backwards in terms of timelines, in terms of resources, in terms of execution strategy as to how you're going to get there.
Right. So, you have to believe it before anyone else does. I find so many executives coming to the table and they want someone to believe in them first. I need someone to give me a break. I need someone to just give me a chance. No one's going to give you a chance.
No.
You got to get out there and take it. I mean, you're the ultimate example of that.
Well, I'm one of many examples, I'm sure. I mean, I've met a number of people in the relatively short time I've been living in Dubai that have, you know, successfully set up businesses and are growing their businesses and are incredibly excited about the opportunities at the moment. I mean, there's a huge vibe here. There's a huge can-do attitude. And I think, you know, like-minded people tend to attract like-minded people. So that some of the executives you may be talking about who sit there saying, well, you know, I need people to believe in me. There's no free lunch. You know, you've got to start creating something exciting to get other people excited about. Otherwise, you know, you're bringing nothing to the party.
Nothing to the party. What kind of, you know, let's talk a little bit about strategy, tactics that the small business owner or new entrepreneur needs to look at. Mm. You know, some people say marketing is everything, got to build your brand. I have another friend of mine who says, you know, there's only one reason why companies go bankrupt, and that's a failure to sell their product or service in sufficient quantity. He was American, you know. He's got to come to market, got to shock and awe your customer. No, but what is it? Is it, you know, where do you need to, do you need to have a really strong sales? You have to, is it more operations? Where is your focus and how does it shift as you go through that from, you know, zygote stage to, I guess, adolescence of the business?
Well, I think everything starts with the customer. Right, so whether that's selling or marketing, it tends to depend on what kind of business. If you're B2B, that may be more sales-led. So if I look at my technology working for some of the big technology vendors, then that was driven very much by selling. You know, businesses, selling to businesses, huge sales force, sophisticated product offerings. And then when you're dealing with consumers and it's more business-to-consumer, then it tends to be more marketing-led. Because you're trying to reach a wide audience, you're trying to drive brand awareness. So it always starts with the consumer or the customer. Always starts with the customer. You know, operations, finance, you know, cash is king. Of course, that's all important. But if you don't sell something and you don't get paid by customers, then you don't have a
that
business.
That sucks, and if you're not getting paid at all, that's really bad.
That's very bad. that's not a business.
I know. Yeah, it's not. So
that's a hobby.
It's a expensive hobby. So, like, when you look at it, do you have any kind of North Star principles, or, you know, do you have a roadmap that, you know, here the first 8 months, you know, we have to focus on building our brand first. We got to make a splash out there, or is it, you know, let's first find our revenue stream and just focus on those first few customers and get a good word of mouth going?
Well, the first thing is we tend to work on 90-day plans. So it's all about what are we going to do in the next 90 days? And at the moment, Beehive is really focused on raising brand awareness. You know, it's a new concept in this marketplace. So in a sense, you've almost got double brand awareness to create. First of all, you've got to actually let people know about Beehive. But then we've also got to start educating the market about what is peer-to-peer lending. You know, how does it work? What's the interaction? How does it work for investors? How does it work for businesses? So, you're educating the market in one sense, but then you're also trying to build the brand of Beehive generally.
Right. So do you feel that, you know, almost having first mover advantage is a disadvantage in this case, that probably the third, fourth man in might be better off because you already have an educated customer base?
If this was 2010, I would agree with you. I think that the interesting backdrop is the kind of global picture with peer-to-peer lending. So we mentioned earlier about LendingClub IPOing at whatever, $5.4 billion and then rising 60% in the first days of trading. But probably the more interesting figure is that globally, marketplace lending is due to originate $9 to $10 billion this year. That's projected to be $1 trillion in the next 10 years. So we're seeing the start of a wave, and that's happening globally at the moment. So I think, you know, people are becoming more and more aware of peer-to-peer lending. They're obviously becoming more and more aware about crowdfunding and the principles of crowdfunding with the likes of Kickstarter, etc. So I think if this was 2010 and we were trying to bring a new concept to this market and people hadn't really heard of it at all on a global stage, then it would be very, very difficult. And that's where you can burn an awful lot of money on marketing. and achieve very little.
You think you're kind of past, you're like into the first part of the early adoption stage.
Yes, I think so.
And so there's enough of a spark there to have a bit of a fire going, the kindling's going, if you will, and now some of the larger, I also stop with the fire analogy. <It's bad.
laughs> Marshmallows, anybody?
S'mores, you know, we do s'mores in Canada, so, you know. Have you had s'mores?
Never.
You don't know what they are? Or, no, they're not. You have crumpets, though. You don't put those on the fire. So we have a few winners for the poem competition, which we'll be announcing a bit later. But at what point, you know, now as an SME, what part do you start kind of institutionalizing, you know, the business? Like, at what point do you actually bring in a CFO, or you start having a proper accounting? I think in your case, where you're actually bringing in funding, you probably need the CFO earlier on. Than maybe, you know, someone who's growing more of an organic business.
Well, I mean, we already have a CFO. His name's Peter. We also have a COO. We also have somebody who's heading up marketing, somebody who's heading up credit. So it's about building a team that can allow you to grow quite quickly, right? Because one of the biggest challenges any business has is finding good talent and then onboarding talent in a timely fashion that doesn't detract from your business. So it's one of the big challenges you have. I mean, you know, we said at the start of the show that we've got 14 people. We will probably be hiring another five. I think we've got about another five people starting in January. So we're growing quite rapidly.
Are you still hiring?
Yes, we're still hiring.
Are you found everybody?
No.
What positions are you looking for?
Head of recruitment.
Do you
probably
need a late night talk show?
We do.
Guy. Could just be in the back. When people come in, I could just chat in the lobby. Just talk.
Whispering. That's Shane. We're looking for Whispering Shane. But it's very, very important that you build out and you do begin with the end in mind. But going back to your point about institutional, it's too early for us at the moment. What we have to do is we have to continue to build. We have to continue to build the brand. But we're already looking at other territories. So the ambition is big.
And the cash flow model doesn't really kick in to scale, I would imagine. So you probably have a long investment horizon.
Yes. Yes.
How long are you looking at? Can you talk about this?
It's a 5-year plan. First,
you always
of all
have this smile when I ask you a question that you don't
know,
like.
Because you know I'm not going to answer it. That's why.
But people need to know, you know.
You tried in the kitchen over coffee, and now you're trying again.
Yeah. No, it's not coming out, is it? Okay. So when you look at it, you know, what was the biggest lessons learned now that you've had your now that you're on your second, .com business or in technology business, what would you say is kind of your single biggest learning to date when you look back at it all?
I think it's probably three things. The first one is, you know, you really got to believe in your offering, your product, your solution, whatever it may be. You've got to have that belief, that passion. And the second thing is, you know, you've got to have that energy and that drive, because it does get lonely at times, and there are dark times whenever you're doing any kind of business. Deals don't come in that you thought were going to come in. People don't come through what they say they're going to do, and you get challenges, you know, coming at you from all sides. And then the third one is you need to build a good team, right? Because it's not a solo race. You know, I guess to use an analogy, it's like an F1 team. You know, yes, there's the guy driving who maybe gets the plaudits, but unless you've got all the engineers and you've got everybody working on the, you know, analytics, and you've got the team principles.
If that tire guy
doesn't deliver, that's the race lost. So, I think those three things probably, I would say, are the contributing factors to success as I see it.
Belief, passion, energy, and drive.
Mm. Belief and passion are the kind of same thing.
Oh, belief and passion are the same. Yeah. And then energy and drive are separate.
No, they're
together?
They're together.
Energy and drive.
And then teamwork.
And Teamwork, that was the other one. That was the pit, that was the, we went through. I don't know how I missed that one. But this is Craig Moore, the founder and chief executive officer of Beehive, giving his insights on what it takes to start a technology business, what it takes to start a .com business, what it takes to get in the driver's seat of your career. The best part is it's an interactive show. So if you have a question for Craig, you can SMS us at 4001 or use your mobile app. Send us a question right in, and we'll be right back.
Dubai i103.8, award-winning news, business, sport, and lifestyle coverage. Stay one step ahead.
Hello, this is Shane Phillips here, and you're listening to Eye on Careers. We're getting the story of Craig Moore, the founder and chief executive officer of Beehive. He's also, previous to that, started a company called Butterfly. He's got an affinity for flying insects, it seems, but... But more importantly, he's hugely successful, and his company Butterfly was sold to IBM for an untold fortune, which he refuses to relinquish. We have a few more minutes here to try to squeeze that number out of him. I don't think he's going to give it, though. But prior to starting his own business, he worked for HSBC, Dell, and EMC. And today, Beehive is one of the pioneers in the peer-to-peer lending space, and a space that's really growing exponentially, and is one of the more interesting spaces to watch. Craig, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
And you know, we just had a competition, which was won. The person who wrote the poem "Mind is the Master" is James Allen, who is also it's from the essay "As a Man Thinketh." And, you know, we were just talking on the break, the power of the subconscious, or how much do you have to visualize? And you admitted to being a fan of Napoleon Hill, who is, it was a Think and Grow Rich is his book, and the whole audio is available on YouTube. So tell us how you use the concept.
I think it was all around the subconscious mind, and you know, there's lots of debate about how powerful the subconscious mind is compared to the conscious mind, but all I know is probably 18 months, 2 years before starting Butterfly, I kind of went through that process where, like, you know, by the time I'm 40 years old, I want to have done X, Y, Z, build a business, sold a business, made X amount of money, you know, as a result of the success. And really just kind of locked that away in the subconscious, kept revisiting. The interesting thing is I didn't have a clue how I was going to do it.
But did you write it down?
Yeah, wrote it down and then just kept looking at that.
Did you put it up around your house?
No.
Like the chief operating officer of ARN writes his on his mirror. He came on the show as well, so I'm allowed to say what he said. He wrote it on his mirror, so when you wake up, I mean, I copied him, and I do that too now. I write with an erasable, you know, pen. You just write it, whatever it is, on your mirror. When you go in the morning, you're shaving, it's there. It's like, whack. Mm. The only thing is when you try to wipe off the fog, and it's like you get mixed messages. It gets all muddled. So that's my problem, but... But a lot of people don't realize that just by writing a goal down, it's 40% more likely you are going to achieve it.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so I think 75% of the people who come on my show have to do that. Write their goals down, visualize what it is. So you had visualized, I'm going to sell a company by 40. And how old were you when you sold it?
39.
Oh, my God. I wish I sold a company at 39. But, you know, whatever, I'm going to go write that down. Go write it down. But people don't. People just aren't serious about achieving their goals. They don't write them down. They don't measure their progress. They don't visualize themselves achieving them. I think there was one basketball coach who used to make his players at the end of the game cut down the nets, because that's what you do in a championship, and then parade around the court, and then every player had to say, how I would celebrate winning the championship, and they would go and do that one night. Is that going too far, or
whatever works, I guess.
Whatever works. So you believe that you know, the subconscious mind is something you need to utilize. It's a lever that you should be pulling.
Yes, no, I do. I think the subconscious is incredibly powerful. We don't necessarily know why, but I you know, it just feels that the subconscious helps you find a solution to a problem.
So that's big. That's a big piece of advice for anyone out there, is to start writing out your goals, visualizing what it is. You can go as far as using vision boards. You can write it on your mirror. You can, the more you express that fantasy, and at the end of the day, that's what a leader does, right? He takes a concept from fantasy and brings it into reality, hopefully to profitability. Otherwise, he won't be a leader for long if he doesn't get to profitability. But, you know, you have to go from fantasy to from concept to profitability, or you're out of the game.
Everything is created in the mind first. So, you know, everything has to, even a great work of art has to be created in the mind before it's then put down on the canvas. So, yeah, I think it's very important that you have a clear, you don't have to have all the answers when you're first coming up with the big picture, but you do have to have a good understanding of what the big picture is, and a fairly... kind of concentrated view as to how you're actually going to get there.
What other advice do you have for anyone out there who's thinking of taking the plunge and starting a company?
I think, you know, without giving psychology advice, I think the most important thing is that, you know, just make sure that you're never going to look back when you're a lot older than we are now and say, you know, I wish I could have done this, or I wish I'd have done that. Because I think we've all been in a situation where we look back maybe 5 years or 10 years ago and think, well, if I'd have tried it then and it hadn't worked out, I'd have found something else, I'd have done something else. It's about how much you back yourself. But you will meet people all the time through life who say, oh, I wish I could have done this and I wish I could have done that. And sometimes you just have to say to them, well, why didn't you? And
yeah.
They all have excuses.
Either Jim Carrey said, who is Canadian, who said, it's better to die of starvation than not chase your dream. You know, it's better for you to be, you know, starving and chase your dream, like J.K. Rowling did, writing her story on napkins in a coffee house, because otherwise, you know, once the dream's gone, there's nothing left. So go for it. But a lot of people don't want to, you know, be homeless and starve to death and stuff like that. But that's a commitment you need to have, right?
I think, you know, everybody's situation is different, but it's about taking risks. But it's about taking calculated risks. But, you know, it is about taking risks. Life's about risks. I mean, if you don't push yourself, how do you actually know what you're going to achieve?
But how do you handle, because one thing when you said, like the beginning of your advice where you're saying, I didn't want to be a psychologist, I thought you were going to say, get anti-anxiety medication before you jump out and do this. But, you know, how do you deal with that anxiety that, you know, there's obviously some times where XYZ invoices don't get paid, salaries aren't getting paid. You know, there's a cash flow juggling act that goes on. That's just one of the possible anxiety things. How do you deal with that?
You've got to try and channel that into positivity. And as kind of counterintuitive as that may sound, you've got to take that nervous energy, that anxiety, that stress, and try and channel that to something that says, okay, all right, well, we need to now knock over ABC. And you need to go out and try and knock over ABC. Procrastinate for as long as you want, and that's not actually going to get anywhere.
I love one of my favorite quotes is, you know, you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great.
No, I completely agree.
Get out of the bed and get moving. And I was listening to one guy said, you know, go as fast as you can. Speed is also about is you know, don't go slowly. And then he said, you know, and what if you're going the wrong way and you're going as fast as you can? You find out sooner. It's still better.
Yeah, I think, you know, that there's a big saying now, and I completely agree with it, is that, you know, it's not really about the big eat the small, it's about the fast eat the slow. And no more has that ever been true than the kind of digital age that we live in. You've got to come out of the blocks quick, and then you've got to keep moving quick. And you're right. If you're going to fail, fail fast. All right? Fail fast and then move on to something else.
Yeah, I mean, if, you know, that's why we eat cows and ride horses, right? Because if horses were slower, we'd be eating horses and riding cows. But
this doesn't go out in France.
Some people still, you know, the Americans still try to ride cows, but, you know, that's another sport altogether. Just to summarize, you know, when we looked at some of your big pointers, number one, you know, you chose tenacity and executing and the ability to execute. And again, I think that's what you were just talking about, the speed, the agility on the ground, having your hands in the business, and then having a customer-centric approach and tailoring your business around that, whether that means pushing more on the marketing, pulling on the marketing lever, but being more salesy, depending on where you need to be as per your customer needs. You organize yourself in 90-day spurts. So looking at the business, again, speaking to that speed factor and that tactical excellence, driving the business in 90-day chunks. And then you've said that some of the top traits that you need as an entrepreneur is, you have to have the belief and passion for what you do, because you have to believe it before anyone else does. Mm. You have to have the energy and drive to get up and push through those dark times. You know, when everything's dark around you, it's the fire in your belly that lights your way. And finally, teamwork, building the right team, picking the right group of professionals, of which you've got Rick Pudner, who's the former CEO of Emirates NBD, who's a bright spark as well. So you definitely have a fantastic team around you. Mm. These were some of the key pointers, and finally, make sure you name your company after a flying insect.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's the key. Is there any last final words, Craig, before we close on the hour?
No, I think I just would say that, I think this is an incredibly exciting time to be in the UAE at the moment, and just generally in the whole MENA region. The amount of people that I'm meeting that are positive about what they can do here, positive about Africa, positive about other areas within the Middle East. And there's a real buzz around that kind of entrepreneurship, that innovation. And long may it continue.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Not only in the UAE, it's an exciting time to be alive. You know, at the click of a button, your product or service could be in 50 countries. You know, yeah. That could never happen before. I think we could do another couple hours, so hopefully we can have you on again sometime.
I'd be delighted.
And thanks again, Craig.
Thank you.
That was Craig, the founder and chief executive officer of Beehive, a recently launched peer-to-peer lender and part of the crowdfunding phenomenon that's sweeping the planet. But coming up, we have a man who knows these roads around the UAE better than anyone. He's the managing director of Jaguar and Land Rover for the Middle East North African region. Two favorite brands. I think Land Rover is one of the iconic brands of the Middle East. It's a British brand, but it's been here for so long. I it's hard to find an old picture of the desert without a Land Rover in it, in fact. But we'll be hearing from Bruce Robertson in just a minute, so stay with us.